Qua sopra.
Ai.
There's not a rule that you have to use the three subs.
He's the best left back in Canada, without a doubt.
Right, and hello everyone, welcome back to another episode of the Third Sub Podcast, episode 185 of the show. And we have a lot to talk about, but before we dive into it, I'm your co-host Alexander Gonge-Ruzic, joined as always by Sammy Rowan. And I mean, this is a Whitecaps heavy podcast. That's all we've got this weekend for you. MLS playoffs rolls on without a hitch, or with a slight hitch, depending on your perspective. Of course, CPL over, Canadian men's national team back in a few weeks, Canadian women's national team back in a few weeks. So this is a Whitecaps only episode, and maybe that's for the best, just because, we've only had one game since the recording, our last recording, 90 minutes of football, but it feels like we have a lifetime worth of stuff to talk about. That, of course, is the Vancouver Whitecaps playoff elimination. Best of three. They cannot even get a win on the board. They fall with a 2-0 sweep to the defending champions, LAFC. That means the Whitecaps head home. Their 2023 season is over. 46 games after it began. They remain with just one win in their playoff history. We'll dive into all of that, just, you know, what this game meant, what this series meant, all of that. But before we do, Sam, how are you this weekend, or this week? We're doing it a bit earlier than usual. Usually we're a bit deeper into the week, so I can say how was your weekend, and it feels a bit relevant.
Yeah, the weekend was pretty good. What a 2023 season for the Vancouver Whitecaps. I mean, obviously not the way they wanted to end things off, but a tremendous home crowd, a great environment, certainly a memorable match, if not maybe memorable for the reasons that Vancouver supporters were probably hoping for heading in. But it was a fun weekend, tons of sports on in general. And didn't tune into the Whitecaps myself until earlier on today, Monday. Saved that result, didn't check my phone, so was sufficiently disappointed by full time, especially given the way things went. But as you mentioned, Alex, so many talking points, things that you can extrapolate to the whole season, things you can start to look forward to next season. And ultimately, I think, you know, from 1,000 miles up, a successful Whitecaps season, right? I mean, Canadian championship winners, Cascadia Cup winners, played CONCACAF Champions League football, made at least a little bit of noise, successful League's Cup campaign. I mean, you can question what the League's Cup means and, you know, what it's even worth, but played it really well against a couple of Mexican teams there, made it to the playoffs. Certainly threatened top four on decision day, which is a success in its own right. And then, you know, I guess that 5-2 scoreline in the opener maybe makes things look a little less evenly matched than the series really was. But I thought, you know, went reasonably toe-to-toe with LAFC and put in a good fight, even though the final result maybe says it was a bit one-sided. So I think a lot to take away, a lot to feel really positive about. Obviously room for improvement as well. That's why sports are so fun. I think that, you know, it's fantastic. The Whitecaps are in a place now where there's something to be excited about. There's a level of expectation that getting bounced out in the first round of the playoffs leaves a bit of a sour taste. It's not quite good enough for this group. And I think that's really promising. And that makes doing the show, writing about the team, covering the off season, just all the more entertaining.
100%. I think overall it's a good place to start. Like, it was a great season. I don't think it's unfair to say that. I think it felt really like a building block season, if that makes sense. Like it felt like there was, what's nice is that there was success, but it also feels like this is the start of something. It's not so much just, you know, the this was the ultimate scenario. Everything that had to go right went right, and then some. You know, you overperformed to the max. Like, there's a lot of encouraging signs, and we'll dive into that, right? Like, there's a lot to be encouraged about with the roster, the numbers, the growth, et cetera, et cetera. At the same time, it's also frustrating because it feels like, I think the theme of this Whitecaps season for me was glimpse. Like, if I were to put it into two different words, I'd probably put it with glimpses, because I think they showed glimpses of being a top tier team, like a truly elite team, but then also inconsistency. And that's also the next step they have to take, is the difference between them and an LAFC, for example, might not so much be the outright talent gap anymore, the way they play. It's more, how do you manage yourself over the course of 180 minutes? And that's where LAFC shines, because, man, they're a deep team, yes, but it's just the way that across 180 minutes, you're not sitting there thinking, wow, they played the doors off you, yet 6-2 on aggregate kind of speaks for itself. Like, they just find a way to punish you, to get the job done. And that's why a team like that consistently pushes for trophies, right? So that'll be the next step for the Whitecaps, and we'll dive into that. I think I'm just prefacing this all by saying, at the end of the day, fantastic season. Great to see back-to-back Canadian championships. Chance at a third next year. That's pretty, you know, that's going to be pretty special. Not many teams have been able to do that. TFC did it. Montreal might have done it once as well, but for the Whitecaps to be able to push for that, they're back in the Champions Cup next year, which is a big deal. They have a lot of unfinished business there personally, especially if they make the right signings. They obviously can push in MLS next year. So I think the way we'll frame the show is, look, we'll definitely dive into this game and dive into the series, but we'll also we'll carry a bit of a bigger picture. We won't go full in like, all right, here's how you manage X amount of dollars on the cap. This is how you manage your U22s. This is how, like, you weaponize academy signings. Like, we're not going to go in that deep, although we'll use what we learned from this series perhaps to maybe dive into a bit of that sort of stuff.
Listen, there will be time for all of the cap intricacies, how to use the allocations, spots, you know, various designations and all of that as we dive head first into the off season. But yeah, as you mentioned, we'll look back on this series with a bit of a big picture perspective. And I guess something speaking to that perspective that I do look back on the series and think about a little bit is, you know, it was a little bit unlucky for the Whitecaps to end up playing a 3-seed LAFC in the first round, right? Especially a 3-seed LAFC that they faced on decision day, that they'd already faced multiple times in CONCACAF Champions League. We know that, yes, there's not the degree of talent gap there used to be between these two sides, but there's still probably a notable talent gap. And something that can often close that gap is tactics, is lack of knowledge between the two sides. You can catch a team off guard. You can throw a bit of a curveball at them. And I think what you saw throughout this series a little bit is the Whitecaps struggled to do that because these are teams that knew each other really well. And so things just kind of played out in a bit of a standard way because there weren't any massive surprises. I mean, LAFC knows that Brian White and Ryan Gaul, they're Vancouver's two best players. They know how those two want to attack. They know the little attacking patterns, right? And they had an answer in both matches. I think we were talking about it right before the show, but some really clever changes from match one to match two in terms of bringing Long in defensively, bringing Acosta into the midfield. They responded to some of those midfield issues. They continued to have answers, trying to slow down Brian White and hold up play. And, you know, if things had broke differently on decision day, Vancouver goes up against a Houston, RSL, Seattle, even by comparison, who, Vancouver's not necessarily covered themselves in glory against Seattle, but had some pretty competitive matches this season. St. Louis, obviously, in hindsight, maybe wouldn't have been a terrible matchup, given the way that series ended up, which, you know, who could have possibly seen that coming with the XG metrics? That's a real, like, stat bros against eye test bros, or, you know, just people that believed in the expansion side. So that's a funny one. But yeah, I think if we're talking big picture, that's worth pointing out too, that this wasn't exactly your garden variety three seed versus six seed matchup. Vancouver did catch a bit of an L by getting this matchup off the bat, and especially like right off decision day as well. That was probably a nightmare scenario for Vancouver.
Yeah, I mean, look, that's something I think it's important to note. Look, like if I know there will always be some debate on the value of advanced numbers. I mean, I will always. My favorite quote when it comes to numbers is humans lie, numbers don't. Jokes aside, I mean, I think everything again will always be put in its due context, right? I think numbers don't always tell the whole truth, neither do your eyes. Probably the best way is somewhere in between. This LAFC team was kind of a juggernaut again. I think we mentioned it heading in, like, yeah, they finished third. That's because they made a deep run of the Champions Cup. And you have to remember, like, it's a credit to LAFC. They finished third. Like, for me, that third was a compliment because a very good Seattle team went deep into Champions League. It cost them Joao Paulo and it cost them a playoff spot. Well, also Seattle went deep. They won the whole thing. Let's not, I want to do a disservice to their achievements. But yeah, I think that all that to say, LAFC is a good team and the numbers backed it up. Say what you want about it, expected numbers. They had the second highest expected goal difference per American Soccer Analysis. I think they had the top per FB Refs metric. So there's a slight discrepancy there. LAFC had the highest, I think it was expected points or third highest expected points per American Soccer Analysis, which is what I have open in front of me. They're a force at both ends. They were a fifth best team defensively in terms of XG against. And then they were fifth in terms of XG for. Like they got the ball into good areas, as we know. If you do that, especially if you have the talent that they have, like it helps when you're creating XG and you have a Denny Bouanga, right? Someone who is going to score goals sometimes that he maybe shouldn't. He's going to score the shots from outside the box and those lower XG attempts. And then you have a decent back line now also and a good goalkeeper that will help save you. So yeah, this LAFC team it was a tough matchup. Honestly, I think based on what we've seen, especially now, it felt like they were kind of, to me, the top seed in the West because St. Louis, they were the top team in the West. Removing all, of course, see that St. Louis was the top seed, but like St. Louis again, the numbers, the fact that they didn't have that Champions Cup distraction, they were kind of able just to kind of go all in on MLS. Like that, they were able to get great success. And I think St. Louis is going to be a team to watch next year for sure, just because their roster build is so fascinating. But LAFC for me is the top team in the West, followed shortly by Seattle. And then there, I'm open for debate on who it is because you can make compelling arguments on eye test versus numbers for a St. Louis versus a Houston versus a Whitecaps versus even an RSL who I thought was slept on. But yeah, this LAFC's team was the top team in the West. And the fact that the Whitecaps got them as a sixth seed is, it's a tough matchup for them, but also it's kind of like mixed because the Whitecaps also did that to themselves, 12 ties this year. That also did them a disservice. This was a fun stat I found to kind of doing a bit of a post-mortem, and I think this kind of sums up nicely this. I think it's a good segue to this game personally. The Whitecaps, they scored three or more goals. I think it was something like seven times this season. They had one goal or less, right? One goal or fewer in a game. They scored one goal or fewer. This is 21 times. They were shut out five times. At the end of the day, this Whitecaps team, they just were inconsistent. That's why they tied a lot of games. And ultimately, that's why this LAFC team was a terrible matchup for them. Just because, again, for a team like LAFC, they're beatable. No doubt. I think they feel a lot more beatable this year than they are last year. But also, as the numbers say, they're a juggernaut team and they will punish you for mistakes. I think it's kind of telling that across the series, I think the XG was pretty evenly split. Like it was a pretty even 180 minutes of football, yet one team wins 6-2. That's the quality advantage. That's the ruthlessness. That's the experience. That's the defending champions.
Absolutely. And I mean, that's what, you know, if you're going to push for an MLS Cup, that's what you're going to have to contend with, right? Like just saying, hey, look, our XG numbers were pretty good, isn't going to get the job done. There's no
MLS Cup, unfortunately.
Right. So it goes both ways. You know, you can look at, St. Louis, you can look at LAFC, but yeah, sometimes you need that critical overperformance in the playoffs, right? Where you just find a way to get it done, find a way to create six from two if you're LAFC, right? So I think looking back at this match, I mean, we can dive into some of the individual notes. I think one thing I just wanted to shout out from Sunday was Yohei Takaoka. You know, it hadn't been a fantastic second half of the season. It wasn't a great showing down in LA last weekend. I guess now that's kind of 2 weekends ago, 1 weekend ago, depending on your perspective. But Takaoka in this match, I mean, he made 6 saves, made a couple of really critical stops, I thought, near the end of the first half when after Vancouver had conceded initially, they were sort of reeling and it just felt like, oh my goodness, need to get to halftime because LA was threatening to score a second. And Takaoka came up massive. He was bold coming out for that one ball into the box where he had to eat a pretty significant challenge in order to make the crucial intervention. It felt like he played with a lot of confidence in a really big spot. And Alex, we talked about this earlier in the season when it was Canadian Championship, those Leagues Cup moments. Some of these Whitecaps players, I would think of like Kubas and now Takaoka in this match, they've really shown up in some big spots for Vancouver. And it's nice to see that some of Vancouver's players, they do kind of have this big match mentality. We can maybe talk about one or two other guys that stood out in a positive way from this match specifically. But yeah, I just wanted to give credit to Yohei Takaoka. Seen a lot of fire recently, you know, people on Reddit, people on Twitter saying they need a new goalkeeper next year. We've kind of been saying pump the brakes a little bit on that. And I feel like, he put in a really good showing, even though it wasn't a losing effort for Vancouver.
100%. And again, that's the sort of performance you need to win in the playoffs. Because like you mentioned, especially when you're going best on best, right? Especially in terms of numbers instead of players, in terms of teams, it comes down to players overperforming and executing. And yeah, Takaoka, I thought, was fantastic. Not much he could do on the penalty. Denny Bouanga feels like one of the last guys you want to face in a penalty situation. Not much Takaoka could do there, but he stood up tall a lot of other times, made some big saves. And that's what you want at both ends. You want your striker to show up and score you a 0.05 XG chance. Preferably, you'd like your striker to score you a 0.85 chance, but also, like in these sorts of big games, teams aren't giving up those sorts of moments. So it comes down to the big players. Like it's so cliche, right? But that's genuinely the difference. Overall, if you do the right things, they will come back to help you. But at the same time, in these big moments, you have to execute. And I think that's great from Takaoka. He feels like such a fascinating one for next year, because there's so many ways you could go. Because you could argue, okay, yeah, maybe he bounced back nicely, but then he kind of also cost the team points. And you can wonder, okay, what happens if they maybe had an upgrading goal? And it's a legitimate question, but also at the same time, given this is his first season in the new league, he pushed over 40 games in the end. In, you know, Japan, the travel there is pretty taxing as well. Like, you can't forget that, you know, Japan is a pretty decently sized country. But of course, coming and playing in MLS is a whole different beast, especially when it's like, all right, welcome to the league. You're playing on a team in Champions League. What's your first matchup down in Honduras? And I know he didn't play in that Honduras tie, but just as a bit of an example of some of the travel, it's like a welcome to MLS moment, right? So it's fascinating because it feels like a goalkeeper like him, it feels like a lot of these newer players that have come in the league as of late, it's been there's a year adjustment period. Then you really go off. Like you see what you saw from Ryan Gold this year where, yeah, he hit the ground running, but then he was able to find a whole other level when he got used to, you know, travel and the physicality and the schedule and all that. So for Takaoka, it's a fascinating one. Cause on the other hand, you could be like, man, he feels like he has a whole other gear to hit, especially based on what he showed at his best. And, yeah, it feels like there's a few players on the roster where they showed an interesting amount of promise, where it's going to be interesting to see what Takaoka does next year because of that.
Well, it was interesting. They were talking on the broadcast about this with LAFC's attacking players and how, I know Bouanga, I think he came in, mid-season last year, right? So, okay, he doesn't get the full runway. But nonetheless, you see how half a season Bouanga was kind of quiet, relatively speaking, then all of a sudden hits the ground running this year and absolutely ends up running away with the golden boot at the end. So there can be this kind of year-to-year progression, right? I think Ryan Gold, as you mentioned, really good example. So I think there's still room for Tack Oben to improve. And, you know, ultimately for this Vancouver team, I think you do want to make improvements in the offseason, but I think you also want to keep a decent core of this team intact. And it doesn't feel like, I think if you bring in another keeper, you risk being in the same spot you are with Tack Oka right now, a year from now again, right? Where it's like, oh, it was just this keeper's first year in the league and we're going to have to see how he progresses. And as we talked about, the window for this team is the next couple of seasons. And so is that a risk you want to take at this point? I think you probably prefer the risk you take by keeping Tack Oka over the risk of going elsewhere on the market. But an interesting offseason question, certainly one we could get into. Someone else who had mixed performances during the season, probably a lot more mixed than Tack Oka actually, but who performed really, really well, I thought, on the final match of the regular of Vancouver's season, which is weird to say out loud because it feels like the matches just kept on coming and kept on coming and now it's over. But Matias Laborda against the aforementioned Denny Bouanga, I thought, put in a massive shift. You know, no goals from open play for LAFC. I feel like that's a success on pretty much any night. And as a defender primarily tasked with matching up against Bouanga, you know, he had the odd moment where he got turned around or made the look a little bit silly, but really recovered well in those moments and overall helped the Whitecaps keep their shape. So, Alex, it's such an interesting one because Laborda was Vancouver's biggest offseason addition in a lot of ways, certainly biggest offseason addition that stuck around until the end of the season, given we're discounting Sergio Cordova at this point. And I think a lot of people would have expected him to be penciled in, match out, the way they kind of talked about him, the way he was recruited. It didn't turn out that way, but there were some nice performances near the end of the season. He has shown signs. Obviously, defensively, Vancouver's got to have a look in the offseason, how they defend set pieces, what the right system is at the back. Is it three center backs? Is Laborda one of those center backs? Is Ranko the right guy to lead the back line? These are all questions, but it was nice in the case of this series and on Sunday specifically to see Laborda show some of that potential that I think we were all hoping for coming into the season.
Yeah. I mean, Laborda, it's an interesting one because I don't know if it was just that combination of the tucked in shorts and the mustache. But there's something in there that the old school defender that was just great to see for in this LA game, especially because that's not really feel like his position outside of the right center back. He feels like someone who's kind of grown as the years gone on. And I think the fascinating one with Laborda that's so hard to judge is like it also feels like he's been madly inconsistent. Like I think he's had some fantastic games. He's also had games where he's been marauding. He's been, you know, undisciplined. You can take, you know, he's had a few chaotic games for the lack of better word. But also it feels like for all of that, he's had such a short leash at first year, especially it's been like, all right, we're just playing you at right back. Oh, you get a chance in the middle of the back three. You have one chaotic game. All right, you're done. Like enough of that. Like we're going to go back to Ranko and then have Laborda. You're back to the outside of a center back. You have one bad game. All right, Javane Brown's back in. And I feel like it's you know, even in this game, it's of course, I think it was the right decision to bring him off just because they needed to take a center back off. And I think it, you know, Laborda, unfortunately, they're going to have to sacrifice someone. But even then in this game, it's kind of like, why did it have to be him, if anything, right? Like, why couldn't it have been like one of the other options? Because you're down a goal and you're going to be hoofing in the box. Laborda, he finished the year with the best aerial dual wins right amongst the center backs on the team. Wonderwall. So I just feel like Laborda, I feel like he just really didn't get a fair crack. And I say fair crack in the sense that he didn't get a fair crack to be the guy who was brought in to be. Like, this was someone who's brought in from Uruguay, did well at the heart of a back four, good in the air, decent enough on the ball at his feet. And the fact that ever since he's been in Vancouver, it's all right, you're a right back. You're learning how to get forward and cross. And then when they went back to a back three, it's like, all right, when you play around the outside of a three where you don't really get to use one of your best attributes, which is in the air again. Like, it's no small thing, but he won 67% of his aerial duels, and that's a solid number. Just for context, Yohei Takaoka is second on the team. So first off, shout out to Takaoka for being 13-1 in the air. Jason Gando is also 2-0, so he leads the team in terms of percentage. But after those two, it's Luis Martins with 69%, which is, again, credit to Luis. Maybe he's a little better in the air than we've given him credit. But then it's Laborda with 67%, Blackman with 62%, Marenko Veselinovic with 53%, and Jermaine Brown with 47% amongst center back. So yeah, the fact that Laborda didn't get more of a crack, I think there's something there next year. And what's fascinating is if you look at building the team, like what could happen, like say the Whitecaps switch to a back four, he's probably the center backs, the one I'd be arguably, like, I don't know, maybe this is a bit bold, I feel most confident with him in a back four just because he's played there. You know, that's what in Uruguay and based on his profile, but also again, there's options for him, even if this back three sticks around, to really become more of a, take a step forward next year, not that he's had his embedding in period.
No, I think that makes a lot of sense. Certainly again, you know, I'll kind of repeat myself. I think a position with a lot of intrigue in the off season, you know, could it be Laborda and Blackman as center backs in a back four next season? I think that's certainly a possibility. They'll look to bring someone else in as well. I think that's fascinating what they're going to do there. And really, you know, I talked about it a lot at the end of this season. If they could elevate themselves from mediocre defensive team to MLS average defensive team and keep the kind of offensive output they had, that's a dangerous team. They just weren't quite there at times when they needed to be this season. Okay, Alex, I don't know. I don't want to give too much oxygen to this, but we can't go any further into the podcast without having a bit of a chat about the officiating from the match. You know, I don't want to repeat the same discourse you've heard online 1,000 times already, but obviously the match got out of hand. It was just very poorly controlled by the officiating crew in general. And obviously, I mean, it happens in Vancouver in front of a record crowd, and all of the biggest decisions in the match tend to go against the home team. That's a recipe for disaster. I think obviously, you know, I guess we'll start it off with the penalty moment itself, because yes, is there some contact? Absolutely. Does the ball look like it's away already? Probably. Is the LAFC striker headed horizontally before any significant contact is made? Absolutely. It's a tough one. I think it's one also that's probably the blow is softened if, when Richie Larea goes to ground, a penalty is granted for that as well, right? I think that's it's one of those ones where you hope either both are given or neither are given. And ultimately, each decision went against the Whitecaps. And then, you know, there were some moments late in the match that I think really drew the ire of supporters that kind of pushed things into complete overdrive. But yeah, I guess we could talk about the one big decision that ultimately, you know, led to the scoreline in the match itself.
Yeah, the penalty one was, it just felt incredibly harsh, I think, because look, it's important to say there's contact. To what extent the contact affected the play, that can be up for debate. I think, again, it's one of those where it's not as black as white as some calls, where you see the contact, it goes down, you're like, all right, well, no matter what happens, it's never a penalty. It was one where, yeah, it felt like Mario Gonzalez kind of initiated the contact. Like, the way he was, he saw a gap and he kind of just like put the ball in and just dropped the shoulder and is like, we'll see what happens. I think for me, the biggest one was the fact that it was so stone cold on the field decision. So it feels one of those where, especially now in this day and age, you have this beautiful technology like VAR. Maybe if you're depending on which affiliation you hold, and if you watch the Premier League, you might laugh at that. But you have technology. at the end of the day, I just found that really shocking that like it was such a stone cold decision because it happened. You're like, oh, that's I'm very soft. And right away there's a penalty. And it's one where it's tough because it's hard to really overturn because then you go clear and obvious. Yes, there's contact. Who is it initiated by? Yada, yada, yada. You're kind of stuck in an infinite time loop. It always feels like in those scenarios, it's like, just why not wait? Why not let the ARs who have those alternate looks? And then you end up caught in a situation where he never went to look at the monitor at it. And at the end of the day, that's kind of how I feel about VAR. I love it. I just, you know, I want it to be used to empower officials in the sense that, look, if I was to be a referee, I'd love to have other looks so I could properly like weigh the decision. Like it's something where it's just so strange, and I get like you can go down to protocol and all that, but I just, yeah, that those are little intricacies where it's like it just doesn't feel right when there's a penalty that debatable, it gets called right away and you don't even have a look, right? And then you're kind of like, well, what would have happened the other way? Because so I thought that was the big thing, and that's kind of just like, yeah, it was that, and it was the inconsistency. That was another big issue, just because that also, again, I hate this about North American sports, and I will forever stand on that. And even sports in general, this whole like notion of, oh, it's a big game, put your whistle in your mouth. I hate that. Like the whole like not wanting to affect the game, because it affects the game so much. Like, oh, it's a final. Let's not give away yellow cards. So then you have guys murdering each other on the field. Like, again, like, yeah, is it hilarious? Like, did I find a lot of enjoyment in watching the Copa Libertadores final this weekend? Absolutely. It's hilarious when you have guys wrestling on the field. Like, don't get me wrong. But from a sporting integrity point of the game, like, it's something where if players want to do that at the final, great. You have these beautiful yellow and red cards in your pockets. Use them. And even in this game, that was another thing that stood out, is that before the penalty, I really struggling to think of who it was on the Whitecaps. I think it was Kubas, but I'm not 100% sure. Whitecaps guy cleaned out the LAFC guy, gave him a yellow, because then now at that point, that LAFC from that point on, they were like, again, hat tip to them because they did it phenomenally. They were tactical foul kings. Like Denny Bouanga had at least 6 or 7 where he somehow escaped without a single booking. Like there's a few others that were very egregious. And then like you're kind of stuck in the zone where the match was officiated so like, it was very like classic playoffs, keep your whistles tight, keep the yellow cards tight, but then you allow a penalty that contentious. That kind of contrast was also a bit frustrating. And then, yeah, it's kind of ironic that on the second goal that ends up being disallowed, that the assistant referee didn't at least do the fact that there was a forward pass on a 3-on-1 with no goalie, you know, the offside rule has to be two players. The fact that the assistant referee, as soon as Bouanga hit the net, didn't put his flag up. So at least there'd be the, all right, we're checking to see if the goal should be allowed versus we're looking to disallow the goal. And that's without even taking out the fact that the referee set a pick. For me, it was the inconsistency of those three things. And then, yeah, just it all kind of added up to what felt just like a frustrating refereeing performance. And it's too bad, because again, I feel like MLS, for the most part, we've watched, 36 games of Whitecaps play in MLS. The refereeing's been very good across the balance of it. It's just, yeah, frustrating, especially in a game of this magnitude, that that standard kind of gets set.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think other than that, what was it, NYCFC on the road for the Whitecaps was maybe the other one that stood out, that was, it kind of got a bit of control. But yeah, I think you outlined it well. For me too, like not calling yellows early on then leads to shenanigans like Murillo diving and staying down for 7 minutes on the pitch, leads to Tristan Blackman getting a forearm to the face and everyone just acting like nothing happened, right? Like it just contributes to the overall chaos that ensues. And yeah, as you said too, with that, the second goal, that wasn't a goal moment. Honestly, if everything else in the match up to that point had not been so chaotic, the official gets in the way, that play ensues, and then the assistant referee immediately puts up the offside flag, it's not a big deal. But it's in the context of the rest of the match. It looks awful because everyone's just, you know, out with a vengeance for this official already. And then they bungle up a key moment as the Whitecaps are pushing for a tying goal. So it just, it snowballed completely out of control. I don't know if I have much more to add really on the officiating itself. It's kind of self-explanatory. I guess the other thing we have to give a little bit of oxygen is Vanni Sartini's reaction and the way things played out post-match. I mean, for me, I said this in writing and I think I'll kind of co-sign it here. My boring, somewhat unfun take is that it was a little bit over the top, but I also like to see passion and demonstrativeness from the manager. And, you know, that's someone you want to play for. So, you know, it would be better if Vanny could maybe just dial it in a little bit. But at the same time, I think it's the reason that Vancouver as a squad has personality and has character, has a lot to do with the man behind the bench. So yeah, I think that, you know, it'll be interesting to see how all that stuff plays out in terms of suspension, disciplinary action and whatnot. But ultimately, yeah, I think you like that kind of passion and the willingness for a manager to back their team, even when it could be costly at times.
For sure. I think it's one of those where, look, I understand it. Like, yes, if you maybe sit back and reflect, did Vanni Sartini perhaps go over the top with the general ensemble of everything that went on? I think, yes. I think, again, like, at a certain point, losing your top on a profession, like on a field, like at a certain sense, like, yes, it does look a little amateurish. Let's not paint it otherwise. I also think, you know, to the extent some of his post-game comments, especially again, I think there has to be, you have to tread carefully there, especially from the official's perspective, because I think, look, like it's tough with officiating, because yes, you can ignore that there are some general issues that need to be fixed, right? Especially there are some things like accountability of officials, for example. I think after a game like this, it is kind of frustrating that you don't kind of at least like hear from the officials, right? Because look, like everyone's human. I'm personally of the sense where like you make mistakes. Everyone's allowed a bad game. Like the thing is, if you're a striker and you have a bad game, okay, you miss a few chances. It's just tough for a referee. You have a bad day. Like it can be so magnified. It's just too bad that you don't get that chance to at least hear, at least justify, at least, you know, maybe hear VAR checks what they sound like. I'm all for all of that transparency going forward, but also at the same time, you can't ignore the fact that officials, there's a lack of them at all levels. And I don't think any of the stuff Vanny did helps that. For example, it certainly hurts it more than helps it, because look, whether we like it or not, a lot of these professionals are role models for the next generation. Then you hear of, oh, well, you know, players in youth level, there's parents with guns to scare officials and like threatening to kill officials and all that. And you can think, oh, you can pretend to be ignorant and be like, ah, that's just, you know, youth soccer. That's, you know, that's just the way it is. That's nothing. Well, at the same time, some of the attitudes at the top level will trickle down to that. So all that to say, I think, in terms of what Vanni Sartini did and said, I think it'd be fair to say he crossed the line. I think he's going to fairly get suspended and fined for it. But also on the other side, to focus more on Vanni Sartini, removing all that from context, it also, like, from his perspective, there's so much that we'll talk about, certainly, because that's just the way we are. But, you know, there's a lot of questions. Like, were the Whitecaps, did they do enough at halftime to adjust after their first half? Clearly, they were struggling. Was bringing off Richie Larea the right decision or not? Did they make a tactical shift too late into the game? You know, all those little things. All of a sudden, those are out the window because you're talking about Vanni Sartini. And you know what? To that, credit to him, because I think as a coach, that's, you know, you good. You deflect the tension from your players. They'll grow from it. They'll learn from it. But also, that also doesn't mean that Vanni Sartini didn't cross the line, because I do think he did.
Yeah. Oh, boy. is an interesting one. This is one of those scenarios where it feels like no matter what you say, someone's going to be annoyed with you, right? I mean, yeah, I'll be as frank as I can. Now, I wasn't there in the media room, Alex. You were, but I don't think that's a tweet that should have been sent out, a quote that should have been shared, given the context of what was going on. Especially the quote tweeted out the way it was, that didn't necessarily represent completely accurately what was actually said. Now, I'll agree with what you said. Should Vanny have made such allusions, have suggested such a thing, even in, you know, the most harmless of jest? Like, no, that's just something, it would be a heck of a lot easier if you just stayed away from it. But at the same time, I think that was a match thrown onto the tinder when it wasn't necessarily something that had to happen. So, you know, people out there, you know who you are, but I disagree with it, but that's the way it is, right? And it's been done now. So, we'll see what happens. Now, turning towards the tactics, Alex, I think you make a good point that I said this in written stuff. I think Vanny's initial approach to both of these matches was pretty good. You know, it was go out and trade chances down on the road in LA. It was a little more cautious and pragmatic in this one, but they threw some nice little wrinkles at LAFC that worked initially, at least. I think the problem was the ability to hit another gear, the ability to react and respond as the match evolved was maybe a bit lesser than, or not even in the sense that it necessarily put them on the back foot massively, but that it didn't help give them an advantage. I think that's the thing to me, right? Is that looking back on these two matches, the Whitecaps could have won this series hypothetically if a couple breaks go their way, if they don't concede some sloppy set piece goals, and if Brian White and Ryan Gaul just go off and take the team on their back, which didn't really happen. The problem is, it just felt like the way Vanni Sartini managed, he didn't have enough that if Gaul and White didn't take over on their own, the Whitecaps weren't going to win this series. They didn't have those little edges. They didn't have those depth contributors they needed to push them over the top without their star players just doing it on their own. And so from like a pure managerial, the way the matches went stat, standpoint, that's not a knock on Sartini. That's just he wasn't able to give them a boost to push them over the top. So I don't really know what to make of that exactly. I still think Sartini is the right man to lead this team forward into 2024 and beyond. I like the project they're building, but it didn't feel like there was, you know, coaching wasn't the X factor in this series, I don't think.
Yeah, it's interesting because tactically it feels like the Whitecaps, yeah, like you mentioned, it didn't lose them, but it also, like, again, it there were little moments where it feels like they could have gotten more out of themselves. And I think especially the big thing was the adjustments, but also partly that is on the depth in the sense that they'll have to find ways next year so that when they're trailing a game, you look down the bench and you got options you can throw up front, and there's a bit more of a mercurial attacking threat to bring on. But I don't know. The tactical one is tough just because the first leg is the set pieces, and that one's, I guess, a bit more frustrating because that's not a new problem. So that in that point, you can kind of be like, why wasn't there more done to fix this earlier in the year? Cause, you know, playoffs.
But the weird thing is that two of those, like, it wasn't even, yes, they were scored on set pieces, but it was kind of like scramble plays, which I guess simultaneously that is set piece tactics. But then there's also this element of complete randomness to it where you just, I guess, need a composure or crucial intervention. So I struggle with knowing exactly what to make of that. It's not like they just got hit on beautifully run set piece plays where they just were completely left out to lunch.
Yeah, but I think that's also, again, it's like one or two breakdowns, fine. Four, that's, I think that's kind of more the issue. It's like the volume versus the actual process. But yeah, I mean, it feels like now heading into the off season, it'll be interesting to see, because while I think definitely, look, no doubt there's some areas to some big questions for the roster. I think if I were to make a list in no particular order, the big things you have to look at roster wise is figuring out what the heck happens with Richie Larea. Personally, I think, again, if he's at the right price, you bring him in. It's more of the, you know, okay, if he's a DP, then I think perhaps there's other options you can look at elsewhere who can do the job you need. But if Richie Larea is able to come back at a non-DP price tag, great. I like that. That's item number one. Item number two is do some trimming at the center back position. I think perhaps you might need to move on or sell someone. And then you bring in at least one or two new names. Maybe you refresh the group and then have some looks at some other guys, right? Like, for example, change up guys 1 to 4 and maybe you keep some other guys around that are young in the academy or young that are around the team to kind of push. And then I think now it's, you also have to do some slight shifting in the midfield, figure out what to do with Schopf in terms of, okay, that's a hefty salary. Is there a way to maybe perhaps move him on, or at least figure something out there? Also figure out what the heck to do with Pedro Vite, because again, Vite's been great, but also you kind of ask yourself, where does he fit in this team? And then you also look if there's a way you can bring in another attacker up front that can perhaps maybe take some of that load off Gold and White, or can even join them. Maybe you stick with a 3-4-1-2 or something like that with the, you know, a new striker joining or something like that. So those are is that 4 or 5 items. I think that was 4 items that you look at. But also for all that, I think there's a lot of onus as well on Vanni Sartini, because it's also up to him to figure out what the best thing to do at the back and Vite. And is it a formation shift is required? Is this 3-5-2 really the best way forward? Could someone like Adekugbe be better suited in a back four? So it feels like there's also going to be some interesting questions with Vanni Sartini, because it feels like for the most part, he got the tactical balance right in the second half of the season, but there are still some areas he fell short on. And now the offseason is going to be a chance to shore that up in tandem with recruitment, because, yeah, like, for example, last year, crosses and set pieces were an issue. There's a reason why heading into last year, when we did the offseason checklist, we both said center back. They went out and got a center back. That center back got turned into a right back. So there also has to be a bit of a coordination with whoever gets brought in.
Oh my goodness. So many things to pick up on there. Okay. Well, again, these are probably going to be truncated versions of, you know, conversations we'll have throughout the off season. But I guess first I'll talk about Richie Larea a bit in this playoff series. Cause, you know, I think that there was a lot of criticism of Richie at the back end of the regular season for sort of his slow start in Vancouver, not really getting involved. Sometimes, you know, being a bit frustrating, taking players on 1v1, but not necessarily combining with his teammates the best. And I thought a lot of that was kind of a bit quick and a bit lazy in terms of people's takes. That being said, it was not a great playoff series, at least from my perspective, for Richie Larea. And again, I think it's not just in the context of was he a good or bad player for Vancouver, but within this sort of hanging cloud of, well, is Richie a designated player level contributor for Vancouver going into next season, right? Like that's the thing that really changes it. It's undoubtable that Richie is a valuable contributor to the Whitecaps. I don't know. Anyone who's on Twitter or on Reddit or whatever saying that they should just get rid of Richie because he's not a useful player, like, get in the bin. That's ridiculous. The real question is he going to contribute to that designated player value, right? And that's the one that, to me, it's like, I'm apprehensive in a salary cap league, in a fixed roster spot league where value maximization is the name of the day. In a lot of ways, I think you have to be cautious about that, especially a Richie Larea that's not 23, but is pushing pushing late 20s up towards 30, right? I think that gives you some pause, as you said, Alex, where the shopping list is not one item. You know, you do want to, could you add a second dangerous attacker, a Sergio Cordova that actually fits into the squad and works? Can you bring in another center back? Can you, you know, if you move out an Alessandro Schopp, do you bring someone else into the midfield? These are all questions. And to me, it feels like the first shoe to drop in a lot of ways will be, what does the Richie Larea situation look like? I think that's going to be a fascinating one. And I think our answer towards should Richie stay is kind of a boring one, right? Which is like, yes, but for the right price, which is a really down to Nottingham Forest. How much are they going to be annoying and try to milk as much out of this as possible? Or are they just content to let Richie go at this point? I wonder what those conversations will be like.
Yeah, it's fascinating because it really feels like for Richie, it's boring, but you have to put it in context. Like, yes, you can get caught up on the whole DP thing. I'm looking now at the numbers. His goal plus assists minus PKs, he was, in his short time with the team, he's fifth on the team per 90 minutes. It was Simon Becher led the team in goals plus assists minus PK. So shout out to that absolute bender he had at the beginning of the year.
Goat, absolute, per 90 stats, goat, because of the limited sample size.
Well, that's it. I think the final total for him was 613 minutes. So shout out. And then it was Brian White.
I will just say too, as like a final end of season note, sorry for very briefly breaking this up, but Simon Becher has like hardcore fans online, because even in the build up to this match, I see people saying Becher should have started at home against LAFC. And it's just like, I'm not sure what you're thinking, but I admire your confidence. The people that like Becher really like Becher, but sorry, we can go back to the top performers.
How can he not? He's such a nice guy. He's got this smile about him. You want to root for him, right? Like that's the boring answer. But jokes aside, Brian White was second in the team, understandably, non-penalty king that he was. Zero penalty goals this year, 15 or 16 goals, if you include playoffs, all in open play, as well as a couple in Canadian Championship and Champions Cup. This is, of course, the numbers I'm looking at are just MLS play. Ryan Gauld is third, understandably so. His assist numbers were really what carried him, because his non-penalty goals numbers were decent, but if I'm not mistaken, they were fifth on the team as non-penalty goals. And then is Julian Gressel, which, as we know, is an elite contributor, 0.53, just behind Gauld in his short time. So, man, I think we also maybe aren't talking about enough about how much of a whole Gressel left behind. Not so much, again, it's tough to say, because it feels like the Whitecaps did a good job of replacing him in the aggregate between Vite and Ahmed, but man, just that final end product that Gressel brought. But then after those four, it's Richie Larea. Interestingly enough, tied with Sebastian Berhalter. I don't know where Berhalter got all these goals plus assists and minus PK. I think it has a large part to do with the fact that he only actually he had 1300 minutes. I can't even say he didn't see the field too much, but two goals, two assists for Berhalter. So all that to say, Larea, I think, is again, 0.28 isn't like, it's okay. I think it's okay, especially because it feels like this is just goals plus assists. This doesn't take into account penalty wins. This doesn't take into account, this isn't like XG plus XA, just for curious. His numbers do drop a fair bit there. But all that to say, I think you look at the numbers, there's a productive player in Larea. But yeah, I agree. It's really that DP tag that's holding him back here.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. Again, I think that it's not that Richie won't be a positive contributor to this team. It's just a question of value maximization. And also, I guess, kind of how you want your squad to play a little bit too, because, you know, Richie does, he kind of has one way of attacking. And if that doesn't integrate well consistently with how you want to get Brian White and Ryan Gauld involved, who are your other attacking players in the mix, then, you know, maybe that's better or worse value for you dependent on that. So part of me wonders if, you know, when it was a team like TFC and they were more, now you played at center back for TFC at times. So it's a bit of a weird one, but TFC, because no one could score. It was like Richie just taking on players and kind of being a one man show. Like that was fine because they just need someone to do something. But in Vancouver, it's a little more complicated. And so, yeah, I think just something to watch during the off season, how those discussions go. Nottingham obviously still in the Premier League and, you know, making a little bit of noise. So we'll see what they're thinking when it comes to Richie. I guess we'll flip it to like the other offseason edition, because we were talking about this before the show, but I thought that, you know, Sam Adekubi showed out really well in this playoff series, scored his, as we pointed out on the last show, his first Vancouver Whitecaps goal, which is cool. I still can't quite get over that because I just feel like he would have scored for at least the second team at some point, but apparently not. And then in this match, yeah, I think, you know, the Whitecaps struggled with delivery in general, but man, put it in a couple really, really nice balls and just so composed and calm and build up, couple like little deft touches, dribbling moves, just so silky smooth. And I think could be a really valuable kind of midfield build up defensive piece, however Vanny wants to. This seems like Vanny's dream player, like the positionless, flexible, technically skilled player. That's just like a Vanny Sartini dream. So I feel like there's lots of ways in the offseason that Sartini can draw for Adekubi to get more involved. You know, if he can stay away from the knee issue, the things that could keep him in and out of fitness and form, I think he could be a massive contributor for Vancouver next year.
Yeah, Adekubi was great. Here's a fun stat. I'm just looking through FB Ref. Yesterday, Pedro Vite led the team with 11 progressive passes. Shout out to Vite for that, which was, you know, just couldn't get in that sort of passing in the final third. But Sam Adekubi had 10 progressive passes. And what's fascinating is that he had nearly half the attempts as Vite. So pretty much for Sam, like 1 in 5 or 1 in 4 of his passes were a progressive pass, whereas Vite was about 1 in 8. So yeah, I think that shows that Adekubi can bring something from deeper areas, and it could be useful perhaps to experiment again. I think you're looking next year. It feels like the Whitecaps, what we saw is that it feels like they could use another body in the final third. I think if we're looking at, again, off-season shopping list, you wonder if it might be wise for them to perhaps try a 4-3-1-2, like a White paired with the new striker, potentially the new DP, Gald underneath, midfield trio of, could be Kubas, Ahmed, Vite. If Vite sticks around, maybe that's a role that suits Vite more. If Vite gets sold, which we have to remember is always a possibility with the form he's been in, the fact he's played for his country, then you find a third midfielder. Ideally, you replace Schopf and get a third midfielder for a similar price point who can play that role. But then in that back four, you know, we can dive into who it is. I think Adekubi building up from deep could be perfect for one of Vanny's asymmetrical back three kind of things, where Adekubi can get forward, can get in the box, can deliver, but can also help you build up. He can just kind of float, right? Like, and I say that in a good way, where it's like, sometimes good players, you want that out of them. Like, say you're playing a team where they press a little more. Someone like could have the awareness to drop back and get on the ball more. Be like, all right, my team needs me to progress from deep. But then if the game allows it, you're like, okay, I can go a bit more forward. And it feels like Adekubi has that intelligence and that awareness. And I don't know, it felt like he showed it this series with how just flexible he was, like how we saw him in the final third making dangerous actions, but also progressing the ball from deep. So yeah, I think it was encouraging to see, especially because he was the least fit of the Whitecaps midseason additions, purely just because he hadn't played so long. And then, of course, he picked up this knee injury. So it's exciting that he's still around long-term, because, yeah, it feels like there could be a real weapon there in terms of if they put him in those right positions, it can just offer you so much flexibility. Because say in this hypothetical back four, if he ends up being more of a drop back into the three and build up and more of a free roll, that right back you target, either it's Larea at a good price, or, you know, you go look out for a profile of a player who is a bit more aggressive, knowing that Adekubi can do some of that covering on the other side.
All right, well, while we're on it, we might as well just go through the third Canadian midseason edition and talk a little bit about Junior Hoilett. Ultimately, his Whitecap stint, at least in 2023, was short and reasonably uneventful. Did get a start or two, but really not able to make much of an impact. And I just wonder, Alex, now, you know, well over the crest of 30, not really finding his role with this team, do you think there's a reason that Vancouver would bring him back in 2024? I think the thing I just keep getting stuck on is it puts a bit of a roadblock in the way of young players coming up in the system, right? Like, if you want a Levante Johnson to get more involved, if you want to bring up at some point, you know, if Cam Habibula is ever going to be a Whitecaps player, anyone promising from your second team, it just feels like that's getting in the way, or that's an opportunity cost. Basically, keeping Hoilett, if he's not going to be like a super sub for you, is just standing in the way of some other, you know, high ceiling chance you could take on a player. So, yeah, I mean, I'm curious for your thoughts. Obviously, a lot of respect for Hoilett, his men's national team track record, his club track record. Obviously, a player I've seen play a lot for a long time, and it was cool to have him be a member of the Whitecaps. But I wonder what the fit is going forward, really, really regardless of price.
Yeah, that one's tough, because I think selfishly I'd love to see Hoilett return, just because he's fun to watch. Like, I just think he plays such a silky smooth brand of football, just the way he moves his hips, the way he combines. But I'm going to remove emotion, of course, from this, and the vibes. I just don't see a fit. I think that's the big thing. I just don't see a fit, especially it feels like, again, for the Whitecaps, again, even when Gressel was here, the issue was never getting the ball into the final third, even after Gressel left. Like, the fact that they didn't fall off a cliff in chance generation shows that guys like Vite stepped up, Hoilett stepped up, Ahmed stepped up, all Larea.
What a reversal from 3 or 4 years ago, when the Whitecaps didn't have a single player who could play like a dangerous final ball. Now the problem is they've got too many of these like attacking mid types.
Well, that's it. And I think the issue is more final product. And again, that's where I'm kind of leaning of. I think the Whitecaps are better served potentially trying like a 4-3-1-2, like I mentioned. All of a sudden that reduces the amount of space for a Hoilett, because if it's Gault at the 10 already, you're going to have to push Vite deeper in the field. You know, that already that, and yeah, as we saw, Gault plays a lot. He's a fit guy. All of a sudden there's not going to be that many minutes for Hoilett. So I just think it's something where I think it's a luxury, and like, if you're talking all things, like, you take everything context out, it's a luxury. If you'd like someone like that on your bench, whereas you turn to a game, you're like, okay, you have Junior Hoilett. I just think at the potential price point at the age, I think as someone like an Antoine Coupland might be better served in a bit of a tweener role, where they said, or Habibula, Cam Habibula, where they said, look, you guys had solid to decent MLS next pro seasons. We're going to improve the team next year. Start really strong, and we'll pull a Levante Johnson. Even if you don't dominate, we'll at least give you looks. Like, well, especially if you can get the fortune of the schedule, or maybe the next pro teams plays on Friday and you're able to have them on the bench on Saturday, kind of vibe, right? And get them 10, 20 minutes at a time. I'd rather see them get those minutes, unfortunately. So I think it's one for Hoilett. I think personally, he showed he had a lot more in the tank than I thought. Like, in terms of, I thought he coped really well with the physicality of MLS. Not saying I was worried, but, you know, there was questions of, oh, how would he handle it? He's old, et cetera. I thought he handled it very well. I think Montreal would be very wise to look at someone like him, because they need a bit more of a chance creator, a bit more of a 10. I just think for Vancouver, they might be better served even for Hoilett's sake, just because the role that they might have to offer to him might be better suited for a Kuplin or a Habibula to cut their teeth versus someone like Hoilett to be used as a luxury, where I'm sure he could go do a business for a team like Montreal.
No, that's a good shout. I don't mind that one, actually. Yeah, again, I mean, I think it's kind of like you. It would be cool to see Hoilett in Vancouver for another season, coming off the bench. I just don't know how realistic it is at this point. So another one to monitor. Okay, kind of rounding out the player thoughts, at least for me. Listen, it wasn't a banner match for Ryan Gauld and Brian White because there were no goals for Vancouver. So, and ultimately that's kind of where their money is made, where their bread is buttered, right? But I think it's worth giving a shout out to the absolutely massive seasons that both of those guys had. Particularly, you know, I think of obviously White scoring the goals, but I think of Gauld in that second half of the season. That's the best a Whitecaps player has performed in the MLS era, right? Like that is kind of peak top quality player stuff. I feel like, you know, one of the top five, top 10 best players in the league all around in the back end of this season. And, you know, that's why you brought Ryan Gauld to Vancouver, right? Like that's why they waited and waited and waited for this big marquee signing. And yeah, I think just, you know, his leadership on the pitch in terms of work rate, ability, my kind of final Ryan Gauld memory from the 2023 season will be that just like nasty in the best possible way challenge on Denny Bouanga, where he slid right in front of the bench, just eyed them all down, clean as you like. It was so emblematic of the grit, determination, the off the ball stuff that Gauld can provide in addition to his offensive contribution. And I think we were kind of talking about this before the show, but I also thought, you know, yes, Brian White scored down the road. He misses a big opportunity in this match, the one chance the Whitecaps really had to level things. But I thought White was quite involved in this one, finding those little half spaces, getting involved in hold up play. The odd time he did get the chance, because LA did a pretty good job shutting that stuff down. But yeah, just want to shout out the great seasons that both of those guys had, because even though maybe it wasn't a dream playoff series for the two of them, they still deserve a lot of credit.
100%. I think that's worth building around, right? That's worth building around. Gauld, especially, he's everything you wanted. Goals and assist machine, chance generation machine, work rate. Like he does everything. You don't even, we'll save time on the poetic. White's the more interesting one, and he's so hard to nail down just because, man, he gets in such good positions, scores a decent amount, but then also you wonder, okay, does a more clinical striker put away that chance, right? And that's the frustrating thing with White. He gets himself into good areas and you're kind of stuck in that conundrum of, would you rather have a striker be an XG god who, because you're like, oh, yeah, at least he's getting chances and he's going to put one away, or do you want that guy who, okay, maybe he just ghosts around all game, but man, you give him that one chance, you know it's going in. But that's why it might be interesting again. Ideally, if you're looking at projecting a starting 11 for next year, that's why, again, a 4-3-1-2, perhaps you get more of a speedier second striker, someone who can stretch lines and be a bit more of that ruthless DP, you know, kind of model. I'm trying to think of a comparable striker who kind of fits that profile that I've just described. Maybe I'll see if I can find a name, not as like a target, but more of as a comparison, because Bouanga doesn't fit that model. He's more of a natural just finisher, the Atlanta Greek guy, Giakoumakis. Oh, actually, I said it first time. He's more of a poacher. I'm trying to think of someone who's like a bit more of a speedy.
Well, so who I was now, I'm hoping I'm getting this right. I think the guy I was thinking of heading into last season was like a Romel Kyoto type.
Honestly, that with a bit more DP and like final product
just
pedigree.
But just in terms of
that
like
profile, though,
essentially pace and poaching, the kind of combo of pace and poaching would be my thought. And yes, I think you're right that you maybe you want to step up in terms of level, but just like in terms of stylistically. Now, also that was going into this season, and maybe the more we think about it, exactly what the Whitecaps are looking for. We thought that Vancouver is going to be more of like a transitional team going into the year, right? And they're a little more possession based now. So I wonder if that profile has changed a little bit. That's a question as well for the offseason.
Yeah, it's interesting, but I think they can get someone like that. I think it shows why they went for a Cordova. He just kind of wasn't the fit, because in theory, Cordova fit that. Again, we've mentioned it time and time again, the get in behind threat, because I think what was clear, and LAFC nailed this to a T, it's if you took away, basically the problem I noticed this year offensively with the Whitecaps, they're great at generating chances, but they struggled against low blocks. So teams kind of realized, we can just sit deep and cause all sorts of problems. Secondarily to that, teams also, I think it's telling that LAFC put a little pace in their backline in the last game. They were able to shut things down. And Aaron Long, as a defender, he's a bit, as you say, all over the shop, but he's quick and he completely ate up so many chances. So I think the Whitecaps need to find a way to overcome that. I think White's great in the air. I mean, he led the league in goal headed goals. Like, he's good in the air, but I think having someone who can maybe stretch the field it helps. But of course, yeah, I mean, I think he'll just have to, perhaps the only difference will be he'll have to be a striker that's maybe a bit more involved in the build-up play than Cordova. I think that was probably a bit where Cordova kind of fell out of Vanny's, you know, favor, just because he was a bit like proper, don't let me hold up the ball. I just want to go in the box and do number nine activities. Whereas, you know, for Vanny, part of White's appeal is the hold up play. So yeah, we'll see what they end up getting. I mean, looking at some of those profiles that were there, like across MLS, someone like a Cucho Hernandez type profile is kind of what screams out to me, but something like that. So we'll see who they're able to lock up, because I think that would be a big difference maker just in the attack. Because like I mentioned, the Whitecaps, I think they mentioned this, their best offensive season ever in terms of goals, but they still underperformed their XG by 5, and they were kind of a go big or go home. Like, they had a 6 goal outburst, a 7-3 plus goal outburst, a 5-0 against Montreal, but then they also had a lot of 1-0s, 0-0s, and you can't have those. So yeah, I think a striker will help in that regard, because I think White can definitely do the job. But man, if you can get a pair, if you can get a trio going between Gold, White, and another striker, because I think we saw it experiment. We saw Vite, White, Gold. We saw Gold, Gressel, White. We saw Ahmed, Gold. We saw all sorts of combos, and it feels like the bigger issue for Whitecaps isn't so much getting the ball into those danger areas. It's more just the having another finisher with a different profile, but someone who can also combine. So yeah, man, we're asking a lot, and I mean, good luck scouts to find a perfect player that ticks all that. But hey, it's that feels like the missing piece in the attack.
Well, and the thing is, strikers, even the best of them, are streaky. And so you kind of like to have two, so that you just hope that one of them is always streaking throughout the season, right? You've got one striker in form while the other one's in a bit of a dip, and back forth. And I think for Vancouver, a bit at times this season, it's like, if White was struggling, then the team was in trouble, because if he wasn't finishing the chances, no one was finishing the chances. And that's just not a position you want to find yourself in. I think part of the reason why White receive so much critique when those chances weren't going in, because it's like, hey man, if you're not doing it, no one else is going to, or at least that's how it felt. I mean, I know the Whitecaps, you know, they scored a lot of goals, but it felt like they sort of, their success lived and died a bit on Brian White's finishing form. So something to just watch out for in the offseason. We're kind of picking at all these little points, and again, kind of looping back to the start of the show, I think it's encouraging that these are not fundamental issues, the likes of which we were dealing with 3-4 years ago, where it was like, this team is dead last in passes into the final third. This team has no one who can carry or progress the ball, right? Like, these are the kind of challenges we were dealing with 2-3 years ago, trying to figure out how to kind of unravel the mess that was this Vancouver Whitecaps team. Now we're talking about well, gee, they could really use a slightly different profile of striker to take their very good XG numbers and just perform a little more consistently. So it's nice to see where this team's gone overall. I think in the wake of a playoff loss, sometimes it can, you can lose that perspective, but we try to keep it, you know, try to keep it within the realm of the overall picture of where this team's been, where this team's at now. And I think these are good problems to have, right? And you got a lot of players under contract next season, a lot of very usable parts. The question is just how do you get the most out of them? You know, and I think primarily of a guy like, this is kind of jumping off the striker conversation, but I think Pedro Vite is a great example where it's a fantastic young player, very exciting young player, someone I really like, but you also wonder like, is that roster spot maximization at this point, right? Like if he doesn't have a really explicit role within this Whitecaps team next season, do you have to look for someone else who just fits exactly what you want to make a playoff push? Pedro might have more potential. Pedro might go on to do much better things than whoever you bring in. But if he's not the right player for this team in this moment to go win an MLS Cup, then you have to be ruthless. So I hope that's the mentality the Vancouver Whitecaps take to the offseason, right? A couple of years ago, it was just about collecting better players and becoming more competent. At this point, it's about building the squad exactly how you want it to go get wins and compete night in, night out in MLS and compete not just for a playoff spot for, but to push for MLS Cup. So I feel like that's the next level of recruitment, the next level of analysis that this team needs to go into in the offseason, which, man, I love the offseason almost as much as the season itself. So as much as it's disappointing, the year's over, I think it's a lot of fun as well.
Yeah, look, I mean, again, pretty much for me, I'll end off on one note because I'm pretty much deciding about all that I have in the notebook. If you have anything else, we can surely dive into it. Well, again, we'll dive somehow more into the nitty-gritty than we have already have in this episode. But look, this Whitecaps team is in a good spot, like you mentioned. Gald's around, Kubas is around. Those are two core pieces that can go up against anyone. Sam Adekugbe has the potential to be a top percentile player at his position. Pedro Vite can be an impact player. Ali Ahmed has found money that you got for pretty much nothing. Brian White was one of the best players at a top percentile position this year. Takaoka is one where there's upside there that you can gamble on and either it'll pay off, either it don't. That's the beauty of football. Yes, you have some tweaks to make at the back, etc. But what's nice about the Whitecaps, again, you look at this roster, it's surgery. It's minor surgery. There's no, you know, like you need to replace the heart. Like there's not something like that. It's cosmetic, so to speak. And it's just about how do you trim around the edges the right way? Who do you get rid of? Sometimes you need to be careful with who you get rid of in terms of all that. But then also who do you bring in to complement the roster? What's nice is that you have a group of stars that it's you can just build around it. Build on maximizing Gald. That's why I say get another striker. Gald was a chance generation monster. Get him another target so that, because you know, as someone as creative as he is, it almost at times that you notice later in the season, people are like, oh, this Brian White guy is red hot and Gald loves looking for him. Let's mark him a little tighter. Well, then give Ryan Gald another target and just build around that. I think this Whitecaps team, they're so close to contending. They finished 13th in the supporter shield race, so mid table. But again, to quote a famous man, fine lines, right? They were somehow. I find this quite fascinating. They were less than 10 points off third in entire MLS. Again, they had 12 ties this year. And if you look back on some of these podcasts, there were a lot of those ties they should have turned into wins. And again, that's a whole should have, could have, would have. So I'm not going to go in there. But hey, they turned five of those 12 ties into wins. All of a sudden, that's a third place team. And even if you remove all this should have, could have, would have nonsense, this is still a Whitecaps team. They never won more than three in a row this year. They never won more than two in a row this year. They never lost more than two in a row this year. If they want to become a top team, find a way just to be more consistent. I think that's another big thing. And that will take the deeper roster. That will take, you know, the right surgery, that will take the right tactical approach. But the fact that they finished where they did, despite being so maddeningly inconsistently, consistently inconsistent, for a lack of a better way to put it. Yeah, if they can, because that's the difference between good teams. Like you hear about it. Houston, for example, they finished ahead of the Whitecaps. Remember, they rattled off this, you know, ginormous undefeated run with a lot of wins at the end of the season. That's how you move up the table. You go on runs like that. You go win 5, 6, 7 in a row. The Whitecaps never did more than 2 in a row this year. So finding that sort of consistency in their game. So yeah, it feels like they're really close. It's just the right pieces. And hopefully this this offseason goes about it. Because they tried to do it last year, to be fair. They were in a similar position and they made some right moves where I think Atakoka was a no-brainer at the time. Laborda as well, like on paper, is a no-brainer. But, you know, make sort of moves like that, especially that you might have an extra, well, you have an extra DP spot, so use that wisely. Potentially look at what you might do with your U22s and make the most of this roster, because as they showed personally, having we've watched a lot of the games, I see a Supporter Shield winning team at their best. But the problem is, as we saw, we also saw a team that played like they were a bottom 10 team at times. And like the MLS, the way it is, you know, consistency is what's going to be the difference. And hopefully they can find that and be more of a top five team, because there's the potential there. And that's both nice because we haven't seen that in a long time, but it's also frustrating because, you know, you want them to hopefully get to that potential.
Alex, I feel like simultaneously we went on for ages in this podcast, and I also feel like we've covered almost nothing at all and only scratched the surface. That's just sort of the nature of these end of season final match debriefs. There's so much to dive into, so much still to talk about. And, you know, what a great season overall, with a lot of entertaining and memorable moments, an exciting team for the most part. You know, as you said, it was never too high or too low. It was always match in, match out. Things could kind of tilt either way, which I think made for some great viewing, some quality moments, and, you know, a couple trophies as well, which is never something to complain about. So much looking forward to the off season and looking forward to 2024, but also looking back very fondly on 2023, I think. So yeah, just give a big shout out to everyone who's listened to an episode throughout this season. It's been great to go through all the highs and lows with you along the way. And we certainly intend on doing a lot more of that here on the Third Sub in podcast form and also on the website as well. So, you know, the off season gives us the opportunity to, just like the Whitecaps, look to make some little technical and personnel improvements on our front and, you know, tweak everything and get it just right for the 2024 season. So we'll be in the lab as well, just as Vanni Sartini and the Whitecaps will.
Yeah, so we'll be cooking up in the kitchen. We'll hopefully, we just see it, we don't burn out whatever we make. But yeah, on that note, thanks again for all. I think it's important to say it's been a fascinating season again, like we mentioned, for the Whitecaps, CPL, etc. We want to thank all of you, the listeners, for tuning into the show. It was great to see the support, especially as the year went along. Some new people came in, discovered maybe the show as you discovered the Whitecaps, etc. So all of those who took the plunge, we appreciate you coming aboard and listening to our you know, our soapbox, because you know, Sam and I mean, boy, well, we can talk forever about the Whitecaps, but it always means a lot to have people join us along for our little soapbox ride. And for those who've been there along the way, again, just shout out for sticking with us. We really do appreciate it, and through the highs and through the lows, man, there's been extremities. So thanks to all of listening, we can't wait to keep going. So on that note, you can find me on Twitter at Alex Gongiruzic, on Threads at Adrian the Case, on Blue Sky at Alex Gongiruzic, on Instagram at Adrian the Case. I butchered that, but man, there's too much going on these days. I'm trying my best to keep up with social and be active. It'd just be really great if we could just combine them all into one super Frankenstein media where like everything's there at once. But man, I'm a dreamer, but I'll continue to keep an eye on the going ons of everything in Canadian soccer there, and hope to continue to interact with many of you on those platforms.
The thing is, if they made one big Frankenstein social media platform, it would somehow be like, it would take the collective evil of all those platforms and just combine it together, and it would be so much worse. So as much as I do almost cheer for that, I know it wouldn't go well. But you can find me, as always, at Samuel_Rowboat on Twitter, at thethirdsub.ca. We'll have tons of interesting written content as the off season goes on, some deep dives, some look backs on the season, and also looking ahead into recruitment and those sorts of things as well. So yeah, if you like the chat and the podcast, you'll probably like the written stuff as well. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. Have a great rest of your week, and we'll chat again soon.